are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Hey, Mark, are you getting through all this nonsense or what?
It's tough, but we're doing what we have to do to get through.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, to say that this is one for the times is an understatement, isn't it?
I never thought we'd be living through times like this. You know, this is something that, you know, you hear about in history books and you learn about it, but to actually go through it is...
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, it was scary because I'm at the age now where I've seen some things. You know, as you get older, you're going to see more stuff, obviously. But, you know, I mean, I came through the times when Ebola was going to kill us all and AIDS and the swine flu, all these, you know, which they didn't. But I've never seen anything. I mean, it was eerie. I remember the day that they shut us down here, March 11. I bet you I'll never forget that day. I bet you won't forget it either.
No, never.
You know, it's never. One of those things that's traumatic.
Yeah.
And I was lucky. And we'll talk about this. I was lucky because I had a small studio, and it wasn't mandated at that point, and it never has been here. But driving to work that next day, it was eerie. It's like a ghost town.
The roads were dead. Yep.
And from what I've seen on television in New York, even watching it on TV, it's got to be a lot worse in person to see nothing going on there, huh?
It's indescribable.
It is.
The roads are just abandoned. You know, it looks like a movie set where there's nothing going on. And I've never seen New York like this before.
Scary, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that in L.A. too, you know, down there. But golly, man. You know, my dad once told me, he said, strong survive. I mean, he's not the one that came up with that saying. But, you know, it's kind of true. The strong do survive. But unfortunately.
We will. And we will get through it.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of collateral damage, I think.
It's unmeasurable at this point. I mean, you know, we have no idea what we're going back into after we come out of this, what the other side's going to look like.
Yeah. So anyway, I see that you're in your bio, you're a personal trainer and a licensed sports nutritionist and a promoter. So you do quite a few things. And I see that you got into this, I guess, because of your brother.
Yeah, when I was a little kid, you know, my brother's nickname was Abs. So he was he's about 6 years older than me. And, you know, hearing his friends call him that all the time, you know, to me, I was like, oh, I want to be like my big brother one day.
Right, right.
And I would sneak down in the basement and I'd peek around the corner and I'd watch him working out. And then when he was done or he wasn't home, I would go down there and I would try to emulate what he was doing. But yeah, he was always my inspiration as a kid growing up.
Is he still into training, your brother?
No, not at all. Not at all.
He's not called Abs anymore?
Not anymore, no. I remind him of it often, but not anymore.
Does it piss him off enough to get back into it? Apparently not.
Once in a while, you know, he'll stop by the gym. And you can see he still has that, he's got a little fire in his eye still for it.
Yeah.
So I think it's only a matter of time before he commits and gets back to it.
Yeah. It's funny. So as a personal trainer, as far as getting into the business, did you start as a personal trainer or did you go right into the open gyms?
So I got a job at Strong and Shapely Gym in East Rutherford. And at first I got hired to work the front desk while I studied and, you know, hopefully get certified at the time.
Yeah.
And once I got certified, Bob Bonham kind of threw me to the wolves there.
Yeah.
And I started out, you know, working the desk and doing personal training at Strong and Shapely.
Now, did they feed you clients or were you forced already at that point to market and do all that kind of stuff?
You know, so I was there a few months before I was actually certified. So I was able to talk with a lot of people. And once I got certified, I remember I went in one morning and there were messages all over the front desk. Mark, call this person about training. Mark, this person paid for training. Mark, call. And I was like, I was overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget doing my first session. It was an hour long session.
Yeah.
Man, it must have lasted about an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And when I finished, you know, Bob said to me, is everything all right? What happened? And I said, yeah, no, it went great. And I looked at the time and I was like, oh, wow, I gotta tighten up on that. You know, that's not something that anybody ever teaches you is how to get through the workout on the clock.
Right. Well, and the thing about that is I remember it's kind of traumatic in a way too. I remember my first training session with somebody, you know, and I didn't go into a gym setting. I was always just, you know, I decided to become a personal trainer after being coaxed by my business partner back then. You know, he got me into competing, and the next thing I know, I was doing this personal training, but man, I tell you what, the first time that I had so many, because I trained in other gyms, I didn't have one myself.
Right.
And I talked to the other gyms at that time back in 82. They were okay with me coming in and bringing a client, and you know, they were okay with it until I got really busy and then I started getting greedy. But oh man, I was like, I stayed up at night. I was writing this whole program out. It was very detailed. You know, of course, it's like, I remember Mike Tyson once said, you know, you do all this training that it all changes when you take that first shot in the chin.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, you know, you're overwhelmed. And again, you adapt or die, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't really have a choice. You know, once you're in there, you make it work.
Yeah.
You know, once I left Strong and Shapely, you know, I built up a pretty good clientele there. And I went out on my own, and I had other companies hiring me, you know, for people that they couldn't get to. I guess at the time, I guess right around 2000, 2001, in-home training around here was very, very busy. So I, you know, I'd be up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd be heading an hour away out into the middle of nowhere to see clients, and then back into New York City to see clients by 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was working at I was running space at World Gym out there. I don't know if there's ever even a World Gym around anymore,
but I don't think so.
I was lucky enough to have the ability to rent space from them, which is how, when I opened my gym, I remembered, hey, that was a pretty good gig, you know, let some other trainers in to train people there.
Yeah. Okay. So when you first got into it, then when you went out on your own, so you actually went into a World Gym. Is that what you said?
Right.
And then you
rented space there.
So how did that work out? I mean, I'm seeing World Gym as just a big box gym.
I knew a lot of people in the industry, you know, and when I went in to talk to the owner about renting space, he was a little bit reluctant at first, but then he, you know, he agreed to do it. So
when
you're talking that well,
when you're talking about renting space, I mean, you could use the whole space,
the whole gym.
Oh, okay.
Just like it's mine.
Gotcha. Okay. And were you like the first one doing that, or he just did that with a bunch of trainers?
I think I may have been the first one doing that there.
Yeah.
And then he started bringing in some other trainers that, and it picked up pretty quick.
Yeah. So how did you determine what your value was as far as what were you charging, or were you, did you have to follow the guidelines of the gym that you were working at?
No, I was completely on my own to charge, you know, whatever I felt fit.
Uh-huh.
You know, and at the time, nowadays a lot of people do half hour sessions.
Right.
And back then there was no such thing as a half hour session. You know, it was an hour. So I guess I was getting like between 60 and 70 an hour back then.
Yeah. That's good.
2001.
That's good. Really good.
Yeah.
And then what did
the rates haven't really changed too much.
Oh, they haven't? Yeah. So
no,
what did
not
that
too much.
What did that entail for, if I'm coming to you and, you know, as a trainer, what am I getting for that?
You know, back then, you know, you saw me for that hour that I was with you, you know, two, three days a week.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing much nutritional counseling back then. I didn't have my license yet. You know, so I dabbled a little bit, made some, you know, recommendations, which was all I was legally allowed to do. But you know, it's just paying for your time, really. You know, I'd set them up with their programs. You know, anybody who, you know, if they had workouts that they were doing on their own, you know, on the off days, I'd follow up with them with that.
Yeah.
I was always very, very customer service oriented.
Yeah.
You know, what happens to my clients outside of the gym is very important to me.
Right.
Because the more I know about them outside, the more I'm able to help them inside.
Right. And you know, the thing about it is, because I learned that too when I first got into my own place, because obviously being out there and going from gym to gym, I was perfecting my craft. And I got some really good advice early on from a guy. He told me, you know what? He goes, when you're going out to get clientele, go to your friends and family to begin with. Because he said,
I never did that.
Yeah. Because he said that.
I felt funny doing that, to be honest with you. I was more comfortable approaching a complete stranger and, you know, begging him to give me a shot.
So that's the way I kind of got started, you know, to kind of perfect my craft, because, you know, I look back now compared to when I first started, I mean, I offer much better service because you evolve along the way. So I was just curious what they were getting for that hour. Now, you said that you got your license in nutrition, right?
Yeah, sports nutrition.
Sports nutrition. So what does that mean? You went to school and you studied or something like
so,
that?
Yeah, so, back in 2001, you know, it was a distance education program, and then you had to sit for a board exam, which was probably the most stressful thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, they're throwing scenarios at you, and you have to be on point with your answers, you know, and you can't prepare for that. And that translates back into your practice. You know, you never know what somebody's going to come in and tell you or ask you or, you know, divulge about themselves. So that definitely prepared me moving forward, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, because that's real world. That's what's going to happen when you're out there. You know, it's good to know that. When you started training like that, were you already, are you a bodybuilder? Were you training back then?
So, yeah, I was always into training. I never stepped on stage at that point. You know, it was just, it's just my passion. You know, we live this, we breathe this, you know, everything we do, you know, we're reading and studying. But no, getting on stage at that point was, it wasn't really in the cards. Yeah. And that wasn't my aspiration at the time. You know, I was trying to build a business and I wanted to be a good businessman, provide a good service.
Yeah. Well, you know, suddenly half the battle, because I can feel your energy and your enthusiasm for what you're doing. And that's really half the battle. You know, one of the things I've been in this industry now for 38 years.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. And I've always had personal training studios. And, you know, you go through these up and down times. But one of the things that my clients always knew that translated to them was that their goals and that they had were as important to me as they were to them. And they felt
exactly
that, you know what I mean? Even if I didn't really have all the knowledge at that point, I had the energy. And I used to tell them, I said, look, if I can't answer, if you ask me a question I can't answer, I'm not going to bullshit you. Okay.
No, it's not worth bullshitting somebody for what?
No. Yeah. And I told them, I said, but give me 24 hours, you know? Right. And I just did it that way. So I was kind of learning on the job, but I was pretty authentic that way. And it sounds like that's what you were doing too.
Yeah. And, you know, in this business, you know, the fitness industry is a small world. As popular as it is still a small world. And, you know, if I give bad advice or, you know, I don't get somebody the results that they're looking for, that's going to affect my business.
Oh,
so it's in my best interest to make sure the clients are getting the results that they need.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I was always like that. I remember one of my very first clients who asked me to help her with a diet. She wasn't really eating much, you know, calories were very low. So I set up her plan. She said, Mark, she goes, I'm going to get fat eating all this food. I said to her, Shelly, I'm not going to let you get fat. I promise you. I said, it's not a good look for you. It's not a good look for me. We're not going to let you get fat.
Right.
But Leo, that night I went home, I went to sleep. I had a nightmare about her. Her head was larger than life with these fish lips, and her eyes were real squinty. She couldn't see because her head was so fat. I woke up in a cold sweat. And from that morning forward, I always said to myself, I have to explain each and every step I'm taking with every client from here on out so they understand exactly where we're going.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I went and saw her in the gym that day, I told her about the nightmare. And we were laughing about it. But to this day, she actually reminds me of it.
Well, I think it's a good nightmare because, you know, I had something similar. Because basically you're taking stuff before this nightmare that you had, we kind of take stuff a little bit for granted because we're in it, but we don't necessarily see it from the other person's perspective sometimes, you know? I remember a story of this is early on, and I worked with somebody, and I always made it a point to get back to them the next day to see how they felt. That was just part of what I did.
Right.
And I called this guy, and I said, so how's it going? And he goes, oh, my God, I ended up in the emergency room last night. And I'm thinking, look, Mark, at this point, I never pushed anybody that hard. I knew good enough to just take it, you know, especially the first time out. It was very conservative. And he says, oh, yeah, I was in an emergency room. So what the hell happened, you know? I mean, we didn't do anything that much. What? But here was the point. He wasn't an athlete. He was someone that never did exercise. He didn't know what the hell that soreness felt like. He thought he was hurt.
Right.
I didn't even think of that shit.
Which brings you back to, you know, we have to see from the other person's perspective.
Exactly.
And that brings you back to the point what I said. We need to explain each and everything that we're going to do with a client and make them understand why we're doing it, what reasons we're doing it, what the, you know, the repercussions of what we do have on them.
Yep.
You know, so first time, you know, somebody comes in and they've never worked out before. Yeah, we have to go through that. Like, you're going to be sore. And no matter how easy we go, because you're not used to moving like this.
Right. And that's it. Listen, and for a lot of personal trainers, because I've seen too many of them, and there's, you know, there's a reason why 95% of the people in the industry don't make it. There's a reason for that, you know, because it takes discipline to get to the point that you're talking about. The discipline to do that over and over again and not to take that for granted and just mail your program in. sort of speak. You know, you got to be willing to do that, and it takes energy. And it's but it's very smart. It's because you know, hopefully everybody learns that lesson that you and I have learned. Because I've never forgotten about that.
The better, or learn from guys like us that have been doing it for forever. So they don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and one of the things I really like doing, because I got into the industry actually because of my business partner now, 30 years in another business. You know, he told me to compete, and you know, I was back in my wheelhouse because I felt like I was an athlete again. Right. And the fact that I had firsthand experience because I competed, I always thought that that really helped me in my personal training business, because I could tell that person potentially, this is how you're going to feel. Because I know that. I think for me, that was something that was a powerful message to my client. And they go, okay, and put him more at ease, you know, to trust you. Because you got to have him trust you. Because I don't know about you, but there's things that you have to deal with your clients sometimes that's very counterintuitive. And it really drives them out of their comfort zone. Or, you know, they've been talked to a certain way. I've learned it this way.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're coming in and going, no, that was all wrong. Or, you know, you're saying that in an indirect way, but you're still saying that.
You know, and sometimes, you know, we especially with competitors, we're having them do something leading into a show, and then all of a sudden, like, we put the brakes on, like, now I need you to do this.
Right.
And it makes them nervous. So, again, that brings me back to the point where I'll never just blindly give somebody a plan and say, here, just follow it. Don't ask me any questions.
Right.
This is what we're doing, and here's why. And then sometimes I have to beg, please just trust me on this.
Right.
You know, because, like, but we've never done something like that before. Okay. But yeah, you know, gaining somebody's trust is probably the most important thing. And especially when you're trying to get results, the client has to trust you.
Yeah. Especially with me. I mean, it was with people that had never worked out before. They had their own fears and concerns, but for me, it was always a bigger challenge dealing with athletes, and especially professional athletes, because you know, they'd been around a little bit and they've had trainers, and ooh, man. I mean, that was a tricky relationship, because you had to maintain being the person in charge, even though they're making $1 zillion and they think they know more than you do, even though they hired you. I don't know if that happened to you, but it happened to me.
I was working with the New Jersey Red Dogs when I first got into this, an arena football team. And I was young. I was new. You know, they all thought they knew better than me, but watching them do their workouts on their own was a nightmare. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And, you know, but I've always had a knack for, you know, getting someone to earn my trust relatively quickly, you know, whether it was through just conversation or, you know, a demonstration, or, hey, this is what you're doing. This is what could happen. Let's try it this way and see how you feel. So I was always very lucky that way, where I would immediately get that trust, which was very good.
Yeah, you know, in my studio, I've come up with a handbook. I certify trainers too, so I came up with a handbook. And one of the things I talk about is, I say, look, a really great personal trainer has to wear a lot of hats. You have to be a trainer. You have to be a coach. You have to be a shrink. You know, you have to be tough sometimes. You have to have all those hats and know when to use them.
Right.
And I did over the years, because if you're just that person that's just somebody who's a professional rep counter, and you don't have any these other bedside manners, you're dead in the water. I think you would agree with that, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, or you're really limited as to the group of people that you end up working with. It really limits your scope of people.
It does. So, you know, the one thing that I find that, you know, has definitely helped in my practice is, you know, not so much being the shrink, but we have to constantly find those limitations on why they weren't getting results. Right. Yeah. And work through those. And some of those issues can be really deep.
Yeah. really deep.
Yeah. So maybe 80% of the time we're playing shrink.
Yeah.
You know, and whether it's to motivate them or to keep them focused or just help them through their day.
Yep.
To get the results that they're looking for.
Yeah. And that was one of the reasons. And again, in my handbook, I had a real problem with these trainers that are just walking around with clipboards and are just simply logging in reps and what they did last time. And that just totally pissed me off, because
that lasted about a week for me.
Yeah. And I said, even my trainers in here, no clipboards. I don't want you doing that, because I want you to pay attention to that client. They may be having a really bad day, and then you have them do some stuff that they can't do. They're not going to want to come in and see you. That's bullshit.
No.
You know? And that's part of that, where you got to use your head and be in tune with that client.
Yeah. I had clients, you know, this one guy I'll never forget, he would always book, he wanted my first available spot every Saturday morning. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's great. I saw him twice during the week, first thing Saturday morning. And the first couple Saturdays went just like any other night would. You know, he'd come in, he'd get ready, we'd warm up, get through our workout, you know, bullshit a little bit after our workout, and off he'd go. Then he came in, he was a few minutes late on a Saturday, and he goes, do you think we could just sit and talk today?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, what's going on? And, you know, then he started, you know, oh, I'm just really stressed out with my job and this and that. He's like, you know, on my way here, I stopped, I had coffee and donuts. You know, he's like, I didn't really want to make that choice, but that's what I did. But he just wanted that outlet.
Yeah.
And it became like an every Saturday morning thing where he was no longer working out on Saturday mornings. It was like a debriefing for him for the week.
Right.
You know, just get it all off his chest. And he was more thankful for that time than the time we spent on the gym floor.
Yeah.
You know, and what this does for people mentally.
Yeah. It's immeasurable.
It's huge.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
You know, and I talk about this a lot, because I've had clients with me, Mark, 18, 20 years. That's a long time. It's like a damn, you know, being married to them in a way.
Yeah.
Right? A little bit. I mean, some of these people, they spend more time here than they do at home sometimes.
That's right.
You know, so you get to know them on that kind of level. But the funny thing was, and I've noticed, is that, you know, originally when people come to you, I'll speak from my own experiences. It's all about their goals that they have, and, you know, the reason why they're coming to you is for these reasons. Right. As you develop their relationship, or as I've developed a relationship with these people, the goals that they originally came in for and those types of things actually become almost secondary, because I develop a relationship with them and we talk about other things besides the workout. And keep in mind, this is where you still have to have the discipline, because you still have to think, I got to give this person what they originally came in for, is to give them a great workout and a great program. And yet we're doing all this other stuff like what you're talking about.
Yeah. And you know, for that reason and that reason only, I'm not a big fan of online coaches, online training. I can't justify, you know, I can't justify in my head telling a client, okay, well, you know, send me $200 or $250, you know, through PayPal, and I'm going to send off your program, and you're going to send me pictures in a week through my email. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it could work, and it does work, and, you know, we've all done a little bit of that, but these full-time online coaches, they're never going to develop those relationships, and they're never going to find out what those limiting factors really are.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how successful you could be long-term working that way.
I agree. And that blows me away when I hear, so, you know, I'm skeptical now by nature, but even more, the longer I'm in, you know, I'm old and cranky and I'm skeptical, you know,
you got
to really sell me on stuff. And
I'm
with you on that. You know, I think that there's people out there that are making a living at it, but I have a hard time believing that the ones that are really saying that they are because of what you're saying. I know how hard it is to be in front of that person and to keep them going, you know, more than three or 6 months. It's tricky.
You know, sometimes it's, you know, if you're working on a floor with a client and they're having a bad day, sometimes they're not looking for you to, you know, hey, come on, Sally, you know, five more reps. That's not what they're looking for.
No, that's right.
And online, you're not getting that. I'm getting, you know, a picture of you first thing in the morning, and I'm going to send you an email saying, okay, well, let's, you know, make these changes, not realizing, like, hey, well, maybe Sally was all stressed out the past 3 days and fell off of her plan and didn't divulge that information to me. You know, you can't always just be there as a cheerleader. You know, you also need to be there as a confidant.
That's right. No, that's right. It's tricky. And again, you know, one of the things I like about what you've said, there's one word that sticks in my mind. I think what separates the good trainers from the great ones is the great ones tell their client why they're doing something. The good ones don't, because they don't have enough information themselves. That's just the bottom line. And you told me that early on in the show, that you tell them why. Huge. I know you're legit. I know you're legit as hell. Now, as you're going through this process now, when did you decide to open up Extreme Gym?
Extreme Gym. So I opened in 2013. 3 years prior to that, so maybe 2009 or 10, I was toying with the idea of opening my own studio. And the space I looked at, I thought at the time, it's too big for a studio. Then some places were too small, and I was just like, whatever. I was working full time. I was in law enforcement for a while.
Oh, okay.
And I just kind of put the whole studio on the back burner. I was diagnosed with PTSD. And I left law enforcement. And with that, I said, you know, I got to do something, you know, full time, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, training people is fine and doing nutrition is fine, you know, but I'm not traveling to people's houses all over the place like a 20-year-old trainer does. You know, I'm well beyond that point in life. And I said, you know what? I think I'm just going to make that leap and I'm going to open a gym. Yeah. Not even a personal training studio. I'm going full blown here.
Yeah.
And I opened up in 2013. And it's the best thing I ever could have done.
Nice. I'm sure that helped your condition too.
Yes. It honestly saved my life.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
Yeah, the workouts, and I actually had a coach, you know, at the time when I was going through all this. And if it wasn't for him in the gym, I probably wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, I totally get you, man, because I've said it before, bodybuilding saved my life.
Yeah.
And in more than one way. I mean, athletics did, but especially bodybuilding. It's that, as you know, that regimen, even if you don't compete, but when you're in that kind of a regimen, there's so much that
it's giving you that positive outlet.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the cascade of hormones and endorphins through your workouts.
Oh yeah.
You know, it all, you can't beat it. You can't beat it.
Nope.
You know, exercise is the best medicine.
I totally agree with you. In fact, when all this happened, you know, I took some heat because I never shut down. And like I said, you know, I believe in dumb luck, and I believe in that saying that I'd rather be lucky than good. Because you know, I've always had smaller studios. This one here is about 2,600 feet, so I've always kept it like that.
Right.
And because of that, I was able to easily comply with the guidelines, at least out here in California at the time. Of course, they were changing every fucking hour, you know, it seemed like. But I was lucky that I never shut down that way, you know.
That's great.
Yeah. And, of course, a lot of other people didn't have that luxury. So – when you got into your gym, how big of square footage was that?
The first place I started at was right around 3,000 square feet.
Yeah.
So it was tight. It worked. And because it was brand new, I think being so small, people overlooked the size. And it was, it was all glitz and glamour.
Yeah.
We've since left there. And now the location we're in now, we're around 8,000 square feet. So big difference. We only added a few pieces and you know, almost triple in size.
Yeah.
But this is definitely better. We have great, you know, functional training area here, a lot of office space, you know, pro shop. So we're utilizing the space the best we could.
Yeah. So now with this that goes on, because you never can predict what's going to happen, you know, throughout your career. You can't. And certainly this is one of those examples. But, I mean, do you think that if you – and again, I don't know if you had a place inside your facility now where you're just doing personal training, or are you doing it in your open gym setting?
So I have the space in the gym where I could do just personal training. However, some people that come to the gym for personal training, whether, you know, that weren't referred to me, they just happen to be in the gym.
Yeah.
They're not comfortable in the gym. So why segregate them and put them somewhere where they're going to be trained? Let's get them used to the gym floor so eventually they can go out on their own and be able to utilize it and feel comfortable there.
Yeah. So you're saying that they didn't feel comfortable being in that, like their own space?
They absolutely feel comfortable being secluded.
Okay.
But I want people to step out of their comfort zone, get used to being in the gym, you know, working out around other people.
Yeah. But do you think that, like in this case now where you've had this now with the pandemic where they closed all you guys down, do you think that if you had a smaller space that you could have kept your place open?
You know, so I reached out to the mayor of my town and asked him, listen, you know, physical therapy offices are open. They have 8 people, 10 people in there at a time, you know, numerous therapists in small storefronts. I said, listen, I just want to see my clients one-on-one. You know, is that something that's allowed? So he reached out to the governor, and the governor's office came back to him and said, nope, personal training and one-on-one training is prohibited. And I'm like, you know, this really doesn't make much sense.
Right.
So with that, yeah, no, I couldn't really see anybody. Huh. It's tough. They're pretty tough here.
Well, and again, some of the stuff that happened here, so, you know, listen, again, I know it's different in different spots of the country, but like one of the things I noticed here was when Newsom came out and told us that we had a shutdown, it was, if you read the fine print and the articles and everything in the paper, it was suggested. It looked like it was mandated. And the thing about that is, Mark, is that the people that are just following orders without questioning, they just said, well, I got to go away.
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know why you would do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been looking into everything, and, you know, it is suggested. It's a guideline to follow.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, hey, stay in your home or you're going to jail. It's like, hey, right. We recommend you stay in your home, stay away from as many people as possible to flatten the curve.
Exactly.
You know, I was actually amazed at the amount of people, honestly, that all lost their jobs.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me these companies are like, the hell with it, we don't need anybody working here anymore? Right. Do they not have plans on coming back? Or are they trying to take advantage of the time to say, well, hey, we're going to let everybody work from home. We're going to work on a minimal staff. And now they're getting the same things done.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on with it. I don't like where we're heading, you know, for a variety of reasons. Yeah. For a variety of reasons. But people are just blindly following along with this.
Yep. And that's, you know, something. And that's one of the things I've always, you know, this kind of, I call it the serious growth creed. I just came up with a creed. And one of those things is being a student of the game. So I have to know everything about my business. That means watching the news for 3 hours a day, as awful as it was, to right. see how I could fit in and keep myself going.
Right.
You know, but, because I had the police that came in here with me. And here's an example. I was categorized. They came to the gym. They said, look, we want to tell you that we can't shut you down. I already knew that. So I wasn't right. frightened by that shit, you know?
Right.
They said, but you are a gym. I said, no, I'm not. Come into my office and I'll tell you why. I had to educate them. Not that I had to educate them, but I had to set them straight. You're right. putting me in a category that I'm not. I understand because I'm complying. I understand what you're saying, sir. You know, but I can control right. my clientele. I can follow those guidelines, you know. And they said, well, don't be surprised if the health department doesn't come in and shut you down. I said, that's okay. Because I wasn't going to walk out of here. They're going to have to drag my ass out of here. And it better right. be mandated, because that was not something that was sitting well with me. Now, again, if I was in a bigger gym, it might be a bigger challenge. But I would have thought that maybe even if I had a bigger gym, I'm thinking, how could I make it? Well, you know, at that point, if I had the skill level, which you do, right. I would just turn it into personal training. Your overall clientele might take a hit because you have a lot of members.
Right.
But you know what, Mark? The thing about it is this. Over here, my business dropped 50%. But because I'm smaller, I could lean way down, and at least I was able to make it. We're not making money,
right.
you know, but at least we can keep surviving. Our damn doors open.
Right.
You know? And then it's like, they scare the shit out of somebody so badly, then you wonder, I guess, maybe, I'm sure you're thinking about this. It's like, you know, how, this is talking about gaining people's trust now. How can you gain their trust again to come back into a gym setting? For fuck's sake, some people haven't left their damn house.
No, I know. I have, you know, a woman that lives right real close to here. She has 2 teenage boys. I haven't seen the kids come out of the house.
Oh.
So I said to her one day, I saw her outside. I said, where are your boys? And she told me, Mark, it's so sad. They're scared to come out of the house because they, you know, they've seen everything on the news.
Yeah.
They don't even want to come out of the house. And I'm saying, son of a bitch, you know, there's more harm being caused right now that may never be talked about, may never come up, but the measures that have been put in place are causing way more harm than good at this point.
Oh, brutal. It is absolutely brutal.
It's sad. It
really is.
You know, these kids need to be outside playing and anything. But you can't sit in the house all the time.
Exactly. And hide. You know, the thing about that is that social media is so different now. You know, I came up during a time where social media wasn't. We didn't have any, right? And it's so funny how things are different. I've always taken heat in the industry because I'm not mainstream. I'm more counter. I go against the grain, not for the sake of it, but I do it because I think it's right and I can prove it. That's right. The reason why I do things sometimes against the grain, or a lot of times. But, you know, it's so different now with this fucking social media. And I think social media is good. But in this case, when I decided to stay open, I got people taking pictures of my business, and they're putting it on social media and saying, why is this business open? Like, what the fuck? If you have a problem with me, come over here. Come over here.
Exactly.
Because I'll go over there.
Yeah, everybody's ratting out, you know, people ratting out their neighbors and calling the cops for crazy things. There was a woman in New Jersey, it was just in the newspaper. I didn't read it in the newspaper, I read it online. Yeah. But she was in her store, she was doing a Facebook Live video sale. You know, she had like a gift shop, so, you know, candles and cards and whatnot. Right. Police came while she was Facebook Live, shut her down, told her she couldn't operate her business, that she was open. She's like, actually, I'm not open. I'm selling on video.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that. That means you're open.
God. Oh, God.
So,
brutal.
You know, we don't ever want to get mad at the cops for this, and, you know.
Right. They're just doing their job.
Being in law enforcement, like, sometimes you're given an order and you follow your last standing order.
Right.
Whether you agree with it or not, that's your job. Right. But the one thing that people aren't talking about, police do have discretion.
Right.
Right. You've been pulled over for speeding before, they have some discretion.
Right.
I'll write you for a seatbelt instead today.
Right.
Slow it down.
Yeah.
Same thing with showing up to a business owner. Like, all right, listen, I'm going to give you your warning today.
Yeah.
I see there's no customers in here. You're obviously not open. I did my part. Somebody called. I came.
Right.
You got to start exercising a little discretion. And same what we do with clients, right? We're not going to treat every client the same. You know, we have to have discretion.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's driven me crazy. One of the things I did, and again, you know, I was just playing along the game of the social media. The person that actually did this was not too far away from me, because I'm at a strip mall where everybody else is closed, but oh, Leo, we're open. And that pissed people off. I knew I was going to take heat for that, but I said, I think, just like what you said, what's the best place, where's the best place to be to build your immunity and to clear your head, but to be inside of a gym?
Right.
As long as the gym is clean and you're following the guidelines, it's the best place to be, you know?
Yeah. Or is it better?
Yeah, you should, yeah. Because at that point, and this is like day number two, I said, is it better? Because I saw this when I drove home. So you're telling me it's better to go out here in front of one of these big box stores, like a grocery stores, standing in fucking line. Oh, that's better to do that. It makes no sense. And I think this is what we've lost to a degree, is common sense. Because of what you're saying.
Yeah, most people don't have it anymore. You know, common sense they have is what they're being told.
Yep.
You know, it's sad, and more people are being divided now than coming together.
Yep.
You know, after 9/11, nobody was mean to anybody. You weren't getting cut off. Nobody was giving you the finger in traffic.
Right.
You know, and that brought people close. It took a tragedy for that to happen.
Yeah.
And now here we are with something, I guess, worse. For lack of a better word.
In some ways.
In some ways. And people are more divided now than ever.
Right.
You know, you have, you know, neighbors ratting on neighbors, people calling the police because somebody's not wearing a mask.
Yeah. Well,
you don't know their story. You don't know why they're not wearing a mask.
Right.
You know, you may not know why, you know, they haven't left their house or why they refuse to wear a mask. Like, it's crazy times. It's sad to see this happening. I wish every day and pray every day that this would be over fast.
Yeah. You know, I talk about, you know, with most clients sometimes, I think this is sort of the same way now with this social media. If you put your hands in somebody else's, your life in somebody else's hands completely without question, you have to be willing to suffer the dire consequences in some cases, you know? And I just feel like this is like, in some of this right now, that's going on. And I think, again, I'm not bagging on social media. I use it. You know, for my own benefit, but when it gets to the point where you're being socially shamed and this, that, and it's like, man, I don't like this. This doesn't feel right.
You know, now being in business nowadays, you know, unfortunately, social media is it's a necessity, and the way you react to things on social social media could make or break you, unfortunately. That's right. So it's like you have to pick your battles carefully. You have to be careful what you respond to, what you don't respond to,
right,
and how you respond. You know, when we first got into this, we wanted to get clients' results. But now we have to be social media marketers. We have to be out there doing all this other stuff that we never would have thought we would have been doing.
That's right. That, you know what? If you got Arnold Schwarzenegger once said something about these guys that compete in these shows and they get all pissed off because they always think they're getting screwed. Arnold made a comment one time, and I think it transcends over to business. He said, "You got to learn how to play the game. Stop bitching about it and learn how to play the game. And you're not going to always win. And you might lose. You know, at least that way you have some kind of control, and whatever happens, happens at that point. That's all you can do."
And bodybuilding is definitely one of those sports where you do have to learn how to play the game.
That's right. So it's subjective, as we know. Anyway, okay, I want to talk about because this is my time. So you're putting on a show, probably the biggest name ever in bodybuilding is Mr. America. So tell me all about that. Now, it went away, but when I talked to you on the phone a few days ago, which I didn't know, you told me that the attendance for that thing was like 3,000 people, right?
Yeah. So let's see. In 1977 or 78, they had 3,200 people in attendance. They had a parade with over 100,000 people.
Wow.
This was the show of shows. You know, it's been the show of shows since, 1938. Right. You know, without the Mr. America, there wouldn't be the Mr. Olympia. There wouldn't be the Mr. Universe. There wouldn't be Mr. California. There would be Mr. Nothing.
Yeah.
So this is the event that set the stage literally for our sport, and to have the opportunity to promote it, it's honestly a dream come true at this point. it's what we're making it into this year is a fraction of what we have planned already for 2021.
Yeah. So why did it go away? Did something change in the industry?
So no. So the title kind of sat and nobody was promoting the show. Somebody saw it on the patent website, bought the title back in around 2000, early 2000s, held it for a couple years. It was run under, I believe, the INBF for a year or two. And then it just sat again. So the Bob Bonham owned the title. He sold the title to a guy in Maryland by the name of Bruce Abell, who he's a Gold's Gym guy. You know, he history buff when it comes to the Mr. America and the, the start of Gold's Gym. Yeah. You know, his passion for it is, I think I'm passionate. He's like over the top. You know, he traveled the country talking to all the former Mr. Americas and interviewing them.
Oh.
But he bought the title. They ran the show 2015 in Rochester, New York, 2016 in Washington, D.C. And in 2016, it was sanctioned by the NGA. The event overall, great. You know, they had, they did feats of strength. They had someone there who held the world record at the time for bench pressing. They had a live band. They took over Six Flags Great Adventure. And it was phenomenal. The bodybuilding part of the show, there's about 30 competitors.
Yeah.
So overall, the sports festival in the weekend, successful. Bodybuilding show, not so successful. 2018, Wayne D'Amelia was going to run the show. He's the former promoter of the Mr. Olympia in the IFBB. He promoted that and like champions forever.
Right.
He couldn't really gain the support of the natural organizations. You know, there's too much politics, too many egos.
For sure.
Couldn't really get it off the ground. And again, it just sat. So this past fall at the Olympia, I was talking with Denny Kakos, and I said, "Geez, Denny," I said, "you know what our sport really needs? We need the Mr. America. Yeah. We need the Mr. America to bring the organizations together."
Yeah.
And, I told him my vision for it, and what I think he could do for the sport by having that title revived. And, he supported me 100%, even though the show was going to be non-sanctioned. You know, Denny's like family to me, he'll help with whatever I need help with. Especially when it comes to this, he loves the sport of bodybuilding, so I went around and I made contact with the owner of the title. It was a little tough in the beginning. I had his cell phone number. I called him. Voicemail's not set up. I said, okay, I'm going to introduce myself through text. I sent him a text message. A couple weeks goes by. I never hear back from him. this is crazy. So I said, you know what? I'm going to get this guy's home number. I called him at home. I spoke to his wife. For about 20 minutes or a half an hour, she said, I'll give Bruce the message and I'll have him get in touch with you. I hung up the phone and I felt, wow, this is going well.
Yeah.
A few more weeks went by. I didn't hear anything. I get a call in the middle of the day. I'm with a client always at that time. And it was him calling. I had the number saved. I'm like, shit. So I took the call and we were talking and I told him, I said, listen, you know, I'm interested in buying the title from you. I see that the show's not doing anything. You know, I'd like to buy the title and revive the Mr. America, bring it back to its former glory where it needs to be. Well, you know, I'm not interested in selling the title right now. You know, it means too much to me, blah, blah, blah. So I said, all right. I said, well, what do you think about me running the show this, in 2020? Well, we really have to sit down and talk about it. You know, he's like, I had somebody, I was paying somebody to pull it off. It didn't happen. He was upset about that. So I said, all right. I said, well, when you have time, I'll come down to Maryland. You know, we'll sit, we'll talk, we'll have lunch, whatever we need to do. And let's figure out what we could get done. So with that, he said, okay. So I'm like, all right, well, at least I'm in the door now.
Right,
you know, I'm
going
to sit and I'm going to talk with the owner of the Mr. America, Bruce Abell. And with any luck, I could pull this thing off. And I can either purchase the title or at least, at the very least, run the show.
Right.
So in January, we talked again. And we made plans to meet in February. I went down and we sat for a couple hours and you know, went around. We talked about his gym. We talked about my gym. We talked about the vision I have for the Mr. American, for natural bodybuilding in general. And he said, listen, you got it.
Beautiful.
He's like, I like where you're coming from. Let's do it. And, you know, everything goes well this year. We have huge plans for the Mr. America.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, the thing about this is I'm actually talking in another podcast with Ed Connors. You probably know who he is.
Right.
The Gold's Gym. And you know something? Talking about the Mr. America brand, I mean, Iron Man's got a huge brand in the industry. Mr. America, everybody knows about the Mr. America.
Right.
Anybody that's in the industry knows that. And I think that you talk about a really positive thing to have in your corner, man. It couldn't be better than that, I don't think.
No, I can't think of anything that would be better.
No.
Other than making this show into, well, I'll announce it here. My intent is to make this show what the Arnold is, but for natural bodybuilding.
Yeah.
In 2021, we already have, we're gonna have jiu-jitsu tournaments, professional boxing, feats of strength, Moss wrestling, strongman competitions, powerlifting competitions. It's gonna be a weekend long event. Like you're not gonna wanna miss any of it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's nice.
We've already booked space for it. We're going from, I think we're in 30,000 square feet this year for the event. Yeah. We're going up right up to 100,000 square feet for the event for next year. So it should be spectacular.
Nice.
You know, the people that ever thought about competing in the Mr. America, this is the year to do it for a few reasons.
Yeah.
One, come October, everybody's going to be itching to get out. You know, our country's so divided right now with the virus and politics. We need to bring people back together. What better way than the Mr. America? You know, the longest running bodybuilding show ever.
Yeah, good point. I think it'll be a huge success, man. And I
applaud
you for taking that on. I mean, if you're going to go big, you might as well go big, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I figured out my budget the other night, and it's big.
Yeah, awesome.
You know, it takes passion. It takes a dream, but it takes a whole lot of balls.
Yeah, it does. It really does, man. And I do commend you. So, listen, you know, one of the reasons why I do this show is because I like to talk about, get the truth out, you know, say it the way it is. And I really appreciate you coming on because I think we got a lot said and done today. And I
absolutely
learned a lot
great.
About, you know, I've never met you except for, I mean, I talked to you the other day, but I can tell you're one of the good guys in the industry and we need them. We need guys
like you, man.
We do. And I really hope for the best. I'd like to stay in contact with you because I'd like to be a part
absolutely.
Of the show, you know,
yeah,
down the road.
Absolutely.
But more importantly, I really appreciate you taking the time out, especially in these times, and I wish you the best.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay?
Good talking with you.
All right. I'll talk to you next time.
Excellent. So long.
See you, Mark.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.